From the Lind Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of December 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from agmarket.net and hear a discussion as it's related to El Nino and weather in both North and South America. We'll do that with Mike Tenora and get an update on the forecast for both places as well. He's with tstormweather.net. And along the way, I'll remind you to pick up your tickets for the IFA series, the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are coming up January 9, 10, and 11 in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. Don't wait, do it right now. After the first of the year, the price tag on those will go up, as we'll be just a few days away from each of the events. The Illinois Farm Economic Summits, the Farm Doc team on the road across the state of Illinois. Your banker will be there. We hope you will as well.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn today settled at 472 and a half. It was up 2 3/4. The May at 485 and a quarter, 2 3/4 higher. And December futures, 503 3/4, up 2 cents. January beans at 1297 and a quarter, down 11. The March down 14 at 1301 3/4. November beans 10 3/4 lower at $12.53. Bean meal futures finished the day down 450. The bean oil $1.52 lower. And wheat futures in the March up 2 1/2 at 612 and a half. For the soft red, the hard red up 1 3/4. It settled the day at $6.26 3/4. Hey, don't forget, if you've not signed up yet for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, the IFAS series, I'll be on the road in January the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th in Mount Vernon and Peoria and DeKalb. We hope that you will join us too. It's pretty likely that your banker will be in the audience. You might want to hear what the ag economist from the University of Illinois have to say. You can do that easily enough on our website at willag.org. Look for IFAS and then just click on that. You'll see all the details of what's happening for the morning-long event, which ends with your lunch at the noon hour. The cost is $80. That cost does go up by $10 on January the 2nd, so don't wait. Get yourself registered for it right away. We're now joined by Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Matt, thank you very much, by the way, for being with us at the Farm Assets Conference last week. And while you don't know this just yet, you'll be on the air tomorrow here at Illinois Public Media for our Commodity Week program, because I polled the whole of the Farm Assets Marketing Panel for today and tomorrow. So I appreciate you doing that. And then one last thing, because there are so many events going on, you have an event that's happening with agmarket.net called Farming for Profit, Not Price. It's February 4th and 5th in Nashville, Tennessee. This was really well liked last year. I think you've got really good sign up at the moment, and you still have a discount running for that one if they sign up early, correct?
Yeah, we do. Basically, what we're running into is we've got a lot more people signed up than we did a year ago, which is a great problem to have. We're likely going to have to change our meeting room, you know, to make room, I guess, for everyone. And so we're running a little bit of a special out until right after the first of the year, so we can hopefully get that all arranged. I would say that anybody who's wanting to come down, you know, probably ought to think about maybe getting signed up here for too long. I know our hotel is actually running short on rooms because of all the interest we've had. So we're pretty excited about it. A heck of a speakers lineup. I mean, you know, pretty much all these guys, but Dan Bozzi, Dave Hightower, our own Eric Snodgrass, of course, and then, you know, Randy Dowdy will be there, Joe Vakovic. It's one heck of a group.
Yeah, it looks like a fantastic thing. So if people want to make their way there February 4 and 5, you can sign up at agmarket.net. And you can sign up to see the Ag Economist before that, January 9, 10, or 11 at willag.org. And both of those will go up after the new year in price, that is. So don't wait, do it right now. Speaking of going up after the new year in price, any thought that we could make things jump after the new year for corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Yeah, I mean, you got to hope so. Obviously, corn market coming into today was awfully depressed. You know, you come in here today and finally get a little bit of a bounce, you know, up 2 to 3 cents. But beans really struggled on the day. A lot of talk, of course, about a fair amount of rainfall coming into Brazil, which is certainly gripping the market's attention at this point. know, the wheat market was up just a little bit. And for the most part, corn's followed wheat around like a lost puppy dog here lately. Tuesday was the exception of the rule when wheat actually rallied and corn went down. But I mean, it's just been a tough week up until today as far as the corn market's concerned. You got to think that maybe you get a bounce in here somewhere. There's just a lot still to be figured out about the 23-24 crop as far as Brazil's concerned. And you hate to get super bearish before figuring out, first of all, how many acres they're going to plant, and second of all, if this trend is actually going to change for good or if it's just a system going through.
What do you think about supplies in the United States versus supplies on the world market, and what difference that really makes for each of the crops?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that, when you look at corn, for instance, world balance sheet, U.S. balance sheet, you can't really make a bullish case, especially if you're going to tack on another 90 million plus type planting this next year. If that's the case, boy, it's a really tough, row to hoe because you're looking at stocks to use that could get, uncomfortably high. You're looking at stocks that could get closer to 3 billion bushels, with 90 or 91 planted and just a trend line type yield. So, world stocks are definitely burdensome. I would probably be the best way to put it. The U.S. is a little for soybeans is a little bit tight. I mean, it's really the only one of the four I can talk about that seems a little more friendly. I mean, the world balance sheet for soybeans is certainly not snug by any means, but the U.S. balance sheet probably is around 200 right now. Continue to see exports. The export interest has been fantastic. U.S. beans have been quite competitive on the world market. The dollar goes down again here today, and that's certainly been helping us as far as our values out there on the world market.
You learn anything about the marketplace listening to Scott Irwin last week talk about renewable diesel SAF and the potential there?
Well, I got depressed listening to him. I guess I can tell you that. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, Scott obviously is fantastic in his analysis. It basically is one of those things that, yes, there's a lot of potential here, but is it going to build out as quickly and is it going to be as robust as what everyone thinks? And as of right now, I think Scott's opinion is that that would not be the case. And so, you hate to get super bulled up in the short term whenever you're looking at all this. I do think there's a lot that's going to be figured out here later in the spring of 24 whenever we analyze. If corn-based ethanol is going to work in with SAF the way that most of us has assumed that it would, certainly seems like most of the indications are that would be the case, but how quickly we kind of can build out that industry is going to be a bigger question mark.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Todd, and have a Merry Christmas.
You too, to your family as well. That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. Visit agmarket.net to get signed up for that Nashville event, willag.org for the IFAS or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And just a quick reminder that I'll be out of the office next week. We'll hear from the Farm Assets Conference, actually starting tomorrow, with the Commodity Markets panel that Matt Bennett was on. That'll run for the whole hour. Monday is Christmas. I have a Christmas special for you. Renewable diesel and SAF. That little bit we were talking about with Matt as it relates to Scott Irwin will run on Tuesday. We'll talk about row crop issues with Emerson Napsinger on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll do the value of farmland, and Friday, we'll come back again with more commodity markets and end up on Monday. We'll talk about farming in a war zone. That's on New Year's Day. That'll happen with Roman Gorabet. So make sure that you tune in on all of those days, and you have the best of winter breaks.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. This is the last one of these for 2023, so here's a summary of what's been a pretty odd weather year. Spring this year started wet and cool with more than our fair share of severe weather. Illinois typically sees about 50 to 60 tornadoes in a year, but this year we had 49 tornadoes in March alone. The switch flipped in April, turning warm and dry for the first half of the month. The entire state was completely dry for the second week of April, but then the wet weather came in right when several folks decided it was a perfect time to plant. The dry to wet switch in April made a pretty big difference between early and late planted crops this year, especially for corn. The big story of the year was a drought that started in May and persisted into July. We had a top five driest May on record in Lake and Cook counties and the third driest June on record in Pope and Johnson counties. Rain finally came in early July and some places actually got a bit too much. We had the wettest July on record in Cook County and parts of Alexander and Pulaski counties picked up nearly 14 inches that month. Meanwhile, Central Illinois was visited by a derecho in late June and a personal weather station in Taylorville recorded a 100-mile-per-hour wind gust. An active storm track in August brought more rain across the state, limiting agricultural drought problems. The rain shut off in September, giving most of the state a good 4 to 6 weeks of great harvest weather. However, the continuation of dry conditions through November has added to deficits from the summer and has put the southern half of the state in hydrological drought that remains today. Water table levels from Quincy to Fairfield remain much deeper than normal as we get close to the heart of winter. Overall, 2023 will likely end much warmer and slightly drier than normal. In fact, as of December 21st, this year has been a top five warmest year on record in Chicago, Moline, Peoria, Quincy, St. Louis, and Paducah. Looking ahead, the first 2 weeks of 2024 look a lot like the last few months of 2023, warmer and drier than normal. El Nino is expected to persist well into spring, and outlooks continue to lean into its typical milder and drier weather in the Midwest. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford wishing everyone a healthy holiday weekend and a happy new year.
In today's agricultural news, let's start with crop insurance in the state of Illinois, where applications are now being taken for farmers who want discounts on that crop insurance in exchange for planting cover crops to protect the soil over the winter. The Fall Cover for Spring Savings program provides $5 per acre discounts for farmers who plant cover crops on land that will be used to grow insurable crops in the spring. Brian Reniker manages the program for the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
For some people that have minimal coverage on some bean acres, that may cover everything they have, since that might be like $3.75. That allows that additional insurer to maybe add some additional coverage to it, maybe wind or hail.
This year, the insurance discounts are available for 140,000 acres, which is 20,000 acres less than last year. Farmers can apply online at the Illinois Department of Agriculture website through January 15th. From the state of Illinois, we'll move to Washington, D.C. The EPA has finally proposed rules that growers like on year-round E15 sales and the use of the widely deployed pesticide chlorpyrifos. More than a year overdue, the Environmental Protection Agency has sent the White House for final okay, a rule to allow year-round E15 sales requested by 8 Midwest governors in their states: Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. But Renewable Fuels Association head Jeff Cooper said earlier, Congress also needs to act nationally.
But longer term, we still need a permanent solution to ensure that drivers can access E15 year-round.
Growth Energy CEO Emily Score urged the White House Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, to quickly finalize EPA's rule so the marketplace has enough lead time to prepare for E15 sales next summer. Separately, the EPA says it will reverse its 2021 ban on the widely used pesticide chlorpyrifos and commit to its science-based review, as ordered by the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. American Farm Bureau Federation attorney Travis Cushman says AFBF sued EPA in the 8th Circuit Court after years of legal battles mounted by environmental groups.
A lot of groups continue to fight us. They have had some success in that circuit and they keep on going there. And the EPA has often been hamstrung and had their hands tied and many of its actions.
EPA could have appealed the 8th Circuit Court order upholding chlorpyrifos agricultural use, but decided not to. Its ban forced soybean, fruit, and vegetable growers to turn to less effective and more expensive pesticides. And finally today, agribusiness mergers have been a concern for agriculture because they cut down on competition and lead to higher prices for things like inputs. The Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission issued the 2023 merger guidelines describing factors and frameworks the agency utilizes when reviewing mergers and acquisitions. The new guidelines were released after a 2-year process of public engagement and reflect modern market realities, it says, and the experience of participants in the marketplace. These finalized guidelines, said Attorney General Merrick Garland, provide transparency into how the Justice Department is protecting the American people from ways in which unlawful, anti-competitive practices manifest themselves in the modern economy. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Time now to check in on the global growing regions with meteorologist Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. I'm looking forward to the holiday. I bet you are as well.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic, and especially having a few days off. That's always a nice time, nice thing to have happen at this time of year.
It is. However, today we need to go through some forecast and some of the climate that's been taking place, including El Nino and its impact across the Western Hemisphere. But I would like to start in Brazil, as usual at this time of the year. It's been dry in the north, wet in the south. Have things changed, or are they going to change?
Well, that's certainly been the case. We need about 2.5 inches of rain in the central growing region to not have the driest December of the last 44 years of record. And there's a chance that we could see that much rain. So that's kind of where everything is focused now. There is a cool front located in this dry area. There are thunderstorms that formed over the last couple of days, and there's a few in progress now. And we'll see those linger in some fashion for about a week. Once we get into late next week and next weekend, there's a number of signs that a large cool front will move into this area and help better organized thunderstorms to form. In the end, we're thinking we'll see about 2.5 inches of rain over the next 10 days. And if that happens, it will end up being either the number one or number two driest December on record in Goiás and Mato Grosso, which is where about 40% of Brazil's soybean production comes from. So even with this rain coming up, it's still going to be a very dry month by their standards. If you go into the southern areas, it's kind of been the opposite stories. We were super wet in October and November, and now we're in December, and it's still wet, but not as nearly as much as it was a couple of weeks to a couple of months ago. And so things are drying out a little bit, but it's actually a pretty ideal setup for them, with most areas having seen pretty decent rains for the month of December, with neither too much nor too little. They'll continue to see some rains going forward, but once we get into January, it looks like a pretty large cool front is going to sweep across southern Brazil, and that'll dry things out for at least 5 to 7 days in early January, but it won't be hot. This is a big cool front that's going to move through, and that will keep temperatures seasonable to cool early next month. And that's also the same front that's going to help those storms ignite up to the north.
In Argentina, what are conditions like today?
Well, it's wet. We're looking at one of the wetter Decembers on record across the key growing regions of Cordoba, Santa Fe, and Buenos Aires. These areas are going to receive more rain over the next week or so, but it doesn't look too heavy. And that's probably good news for them because they're still planting corn and soybeans, and with the real wet weather we had over the last 7 days, which was by far the wettest week in more than a year, conditions now are moist, and they like to dry out just a little bit to finish up this planting. Once we get into next month, that same front we talked about earlier is very likely going to sweep across Argentina late next week and next weekend, and that will also usher in a drier and cooler period. So drier but not hot, and keep in mind, they're moist, so it's going to be a while before we're very concerned about anything in Argentina.
On the note that it's wet, in the United States, the hard red winter wheat growing regions, or at least some of them, have been pretty soggy. Can you tell me about those conditions?
Well, if we look at the coverage of dryness on the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop, and what we're looking at here is the proportion of the crop that received less than 3/4 of its normal rainfall over the last 30 days and over the last 60 days, the coverage of dryness measured by that statistic is very low. In fact, it's the lowest in December going all the way back to 2015, which not surprisingly was also one of the moderate to strong El Nino years. So conditions are fine across the hard red winter wheat belt, and historically, they continue to receive really good rains all the way through April and May. And we've had many of our biggest wheat crops on record when we had this type of El Nino. So everything is matching to this point in time, with rains having shown up finally and more rains on the way over the next 5 days. Some pretty big totals too. And then again, once we get into next year, we'll more than likely see a few more of these types of systems, and that'll just keep that crop moist right into the heart of the growing season.
You gave us some historical context there as it relates to El Nino. Is this a typical El Nino year for the United States, Brazil, and Argentina?
Well, this is a moderate to strong El Nino, so it's probably the fourth or fifth strongest of the last 60 years. So this is not an anomalously strong El Nino like we saw back in 1997 into 98 or from 2015 into 16. But it is a notable El Nino because once you get into these moderate to strong events, the correlations to weather increase dramatically at this time of the year. And that's why we're seeing that dryness in the north of Brazil. That's why we're seeing the wetness in southern Brazil. That's why Argentina is doing great. And that's why the central United States is very mild for this time of the year. And it's also very wet in the plains and even into the Corn Belt. This is all pretty much expected when you have this type of setup. And we were talking about this back in September and October, that these are the types of things you need to start looking out for from a long-range weather perspective. Which, keep in mind, a lot of the times when you try to forecast weather 3 to 6 months out, your conclusion is, I have no idea. There's just no real way to project what it's going to look like 3 to 6 months from now. This was one of those exceptions where you have a very high likelihood of a strong El Nino. You got it, and then everything just falls into place. The El Nino did peak about 3 weeks ago, though, because we measure water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean to kind of see where it's at. Well, all indications are that it peaked 3 weeks ago, and it's now in a weakening phase. That weakening will continue for 3 to 6 months, and once we get that far into the future, the effects of it will diminish, and that's why we really don't know what this means for the U.S. corn and soybean growing season. It's just way too far into the future, and the El Nino will not be a factor by then.
You tipped off something in my mind here. I remember back, and I don't recall whether it was 15 or 16, the corn futures rallied sharply. It was a drought in South America prior to the time that that second crop had gotten large enough for me to really make note of it, but certainly the market had. Was there a correlation there?
Well, there certainly is. Most of the second crop corn out of Brazil is produced in Goiás and Mato Grosso. And these areas are basically planting in February and March, and that's right after that soybean harvest. And then they're sensitive in March, April, and May. So that's kind of like their June, July, and August in comparison to the U.S. Well, if you look at the past El Ninos, the year that you're talking about is 2016. That was the year that we came out of an El Nino like this one, and it was much drier than normal. The same thing happened in 1983, and it also happened in 1998, where it was considerably drier than normal over March through May in Goiás and Mato Grosso, and that would put pressure on that second crop corn. Now, keep in mind, you go back 20 years, they weren't growing corn at that time of the year, so it doesn't show up in your yield data, because there isn't any. But we know that the weather was much drier than normal. Now, we need to keep in mind, though, that it was much drier than normal, but there were several other years that were way drier than that back in 1980 and 1993 and also in 2002. And those were not El Nino years. Even 2007 was a super dry year. So it does end up being drier than normal, but it wasn't among the driest on record in this type of setup.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. You have a great holiday.
You too, Todd. Thanks for having me here.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You've been, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. We're on our website at willag.org today. You can sign up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Look for the IFAS series. Don't wait. Do it now at willag.org. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme music for the afternoon is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.